This morning we're going to continue a conversation, talk about the precepts. And you started this last week, and I'm going to continue it, and then we'll go on from here. So the precept I'm going to be talking about today is the second precept, the precept about stealing, not stealing. First, I'd like to take a minute to say a few words about what the precepts are and a couple of different ways that we consider the precepts. So as you know, after the Buddha started teaching, people started gathering around him. They started to study with him, and humans being humans, there were problems that arose. There were problems that arose, and the Buddha addressed those problems. So he said, you know, somebody would take something from someone else, and that, no, that doesn't really work, right? Things came up. It doesn't work to slander. It doesn't work. If we want to get along as human beings, these are the guidelines that we have that are very familiar. Not to kill, not to steal, not to speak ill of others, not to misuse sexuality, all of these things. So one way of understanding the precepts is as guidelines that arose from the human community. And this is very important for us because they are not commandments that came down from on high. They arose from day-to-day interactions of ordinary people. And the awakened one, the Buddha, said, please, folks, don't steal. This doesn't work. So this grew into what's called the Vinaya precepts. So the monks were given 250 precepts to follow, and the nuns 348. And lay people took 5, 8, or 10 precepts. And this is still true in Theravadan countries and in China and other places. These precepts were so detailed, some of them were so detailed, like don't sleep on a high bed, things like that. But they grew, and if you read the stories that are tied to them, it's fascinating. Now, there's a little story for each precept. Like what happened, and then why did that one precept come? So one of the Chinese nun that I taught some years ago gave me a copy of the precepts and the stories, and I really enjoyed reading them. So this is a very important way of viewing the precepts. Another way of looking at them is that they are a reflection of the awakened mind. So in the 9th century, Saicho, who was the founder of Tendai Buddhism, conferred Mahayana precepts on people based on the Brahmanet Sutra, which, for those of you that are a little geeky, sutra we usually think of as coming from India, but this is understood to have been written in China. And Dogen Zenji, the founder of Soto Zen, took those precepts, but he did not take the precepts I was speaking about earlier. Then he developed or expressed or continued this idea of the Bodhisattva precepts and began giving them in a way we understand them now. The basic idea, this basic idea of the precepts is slightly different from the Vinaya. It's under the Bodhisattva precepts, or this formulation of the precepts, are understood and taught to be in the Brahmanet Sutra, the expression of Buddha's mind, the direct expression of awakening. So you can see there's a little difference between the a set of guidelines for human behavior that came out of a community and a direct expression of Buddha's mind. But there's a connection, because Buddha was the one that interacted with that community, right? This awakened mind is what prescribed or detailed or expressed guidance for us as we live together. It's important to remember this perspective on the Bodhisattva precepts, because it tells us about a direct connection between our own awakened mind and our behavior. And I'll speak a little bit more about this later, but when we rest in our awakened mind, the precepts are naturally followed. So this second Bodhisattva precept is basically, I vow not to steal. Or, a disciple of the Buddha does not steal. So it's interesting when we look at different words for steal. I looked them up, and there's a bunch of them. It's really interesting. We have a lot of words for steal. Now, why would that be? Why would, you know, it's like they say, you know, Eskimos have like 30 words for snow. Why would we have a lot of words for steal if it wasn't something that we tended to do? So some of those words are pilfer, swipe, abscond, purloin, rob, filch, loot, poach, pillage, and misappropriate. That's just a short list. And when I was in my youth, another term was liberate. We're going to liberate that steak, or more likely at that point, those potatoes. Right. So this idea is that we are appropriating something that belongs to another without first getting their permission. So a disciple of the Buddha does not take what is not given is another way of framing that. So it's one thing to say a disciple of the Buddha does not steal, right? But it's another to say a disciple of the Buddha does not take what is not given. That means if it's not specifically given, it's not yours to use or take. Sometimes in Dharma centers you'll see a little sign that says given. It means, please feel free, this is for the community. Another way that this precept is described, this is attributed to Bodhidharma, self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, not having thoughts of gaining is called the precept of not stealing. So, not having thoughts of gaining. The flip side of that is, if when we have thoughts of gaining, grasping, that's what leads us to steal. So we're not talking about, you know, this can be tricky, because we want to have thoughts of gaining. We want to become kinder people. We want to become more stable people. We want to gain a greater time in our lives for zazen, right? But this is the sense of gaining, grasping, based on an idea that we're not already enough. We need more, need more, need more, need more, need more. If we feel like we need more, need more, need more, it's pretty easy to slide over into, oh, you've got what I need, so I'm going to take it. Dogen says, self and things of the world are just as they are. The gate of emancipation stands open. Self and things of the world are just as they are. The gate of emancipation is open. So again, I want you to get the feel for this. Things just as they are. The gate of emancipation is always open. There's a sense of settledness there, sense of generosity, sense of peace about that. The Zen peacemaker orders say, being satisfied with what I have, this is the precept of non-stealing. Being satisfied with what I have. Now again, that doesn't mean that if you're hungry or you're deprived that you don't act on your own behalf. It does not mean that. It means cultivating contentment. Not being driven by false needs. Thich Nhat Hanh says, possess nothing that belongs to others. Respect the property of others. But prevent others from enriching themselves from human suffering or the suffering of other beings. Possess nothing that belongs to others. Now, all of these are koans. All of these are things to consider. What belongs to others? What belongs to me? Ultimately, what belongs to me? How do I live in such a way that I don't possess things that belong to others? How do I take responsibility for myself and my possessions and what I have, understanding it properly, and not possess what belongs to others? So to not take what is not given really gets at the root of this. Think about what it would be like to live in such a way that we ask permission for all the things that we take. You know, think about, you know, you're in the vegetable aisle. Carrots, it is okay with you if I take you home and eat you? You know, think about it. This is especially true about the things we take for granted, right? We take for granted flipping on a light switch. If you've ever lived without electricity, the rest of your life you will be very grateful every time you flip on a light switch. Turn on the stove. You know, we're given so much, especially the things we take for granted. So what is it like to think about asking permission? Or being aware of what we're given. We can steal from ourselves, from other people, from other beings, from the community, from the environment. So we think about, what is the stealing? What is it taking what's not given? So we robbed a bank, or took someone's wallet, or car, or their lunch. That's pretty obvious. Say we're at work and we're at a meeting and somebody says, wow, you did a good job on that report. And you know full well that it was your colleague that did most of the work. But you say, oh, thank you. That's stealing. Right? You know that. You know the feeling. You know that really what your heart wants to say is, actually, that was Mary's work. I helped, but I'll let her know. But it's also true we steal when we don't care for ourselves. We steal our life from ourselves and what we can contribute to the world if we don't set effective boundaries and care for ourselves. We steal from ourselves on the cushion when we indulge in fantasies or daydreaming. And we don't, with kindness, come back to our breath and our body, our intention. We steal from ourselves by not prioritizing and making sure what we value most is how we spend our days. So if we say to ourselves, you know, it's really important for me to get out and walk. And then we sit at our desk for 10 hours. Or we say, I really want to go to the Zendo. And we don't go. Or we say, Right. I want to cultivate right speech. That matters to me. To speak well to others. To think clearly. And then we're off and running. These are ways that we steal from ourselves and we steal from others. We steal from others when we don't practice respect and care. Right? It's very easy to harm others. So when we practice respect and care, we're giving something. So the same is true for physical objects. We steal the dignity of an object and its ability to give to us when we don't care for it. Sapus love to have to be fluffed. You know? It's such a gift to smooth the zabaton out and put it against the wall. It makes very happy. And it's a gift to all of us. And we come in and we say, oh, the space is so nice. You know? Neat and clean and fresh. So we, in our movement with one another, we're aware of not stealing. Not stealing from ourselves, not stealing from others. When we steal, we harm not only those others, but we harm ourselves. We increase delusion. We disturb our minds. And when we disturb our minds, we can cause problems. If we're unconscious and we don't see our own stealing, I don't want to look there. I don't want to notice that. That's too much. Then we just merrily go along, creating more problems. So there has to be awareness and kindness. I say this over and over again, but it's the only way that we can pay attention. When we're unconscious, when we don't pay attention, our craving can lead us around by the nose. And then we just steal without even knowing it. So, when we are when we are investigating this, we look at these descriptions of the precepts and we reflect on it. We say, well, a mind at peace, a mind that's content, does not steal. Does not occur to us to steal. So we can see how stealing occurs. I found a quote by Mahatma Gandhi that I thought was really nice. Actually, it's in Akin Roshi's book on the precepts. Here's what Mahatma Gandhi said to say. We are not always aware of our real needs, and most of us improperly multiply our wants, thus unconsciously make thieves of ourselves. If we devote some thought to the subject, we shall find that we can get rid of quite a number of our wants, don't you think? One who follows the observance of non-stealing will bring about a progressive reduction of his own wants. Much of this distressing poverty in the world has arisen out of the breaches of the principle of non-stealing. Now notice he doesn't say you won't have any wants and needs. He doesn't say get rid of all your wants and needs. He says, you know, that our, when we don't pay attention, our needs and wants multiply. They multiply. I feel like I need this, I need that, I need. Want. And therefore we become thieves of ourselves. So when we devote some thought, just some thought, when we pay attention to some degree to this subject, we'll find that we can actually shed a number of our wants. They're not that important. We We don't need to spend our lives getting the latest this, that, or the other. And it's not just physical objects, right? So when we follow this observance of non-stealing, we find some measure of contentment. Our fundamental nature is interrelationship. We've talked about this over and over again. That's who we are at basis, is this dynamic life of interrelationship. That's who we are. When we return to that, that self is a self at peace, even in the midst of distressing circumstances. That self is broad and stable and generous. It's at rest. It's not driven by the latest, this, that, and the other. When we say a mind at rest, we don't mean that we don't act on behalf of others or ourselves. It means that those actions come from a mind of connection. That mind of connection, one of the most distressing things, the most anguishing things, is to feel isolated, alone. We'll do anything to remove ourselves from that state. So that's like, the Jodo Shin folks have a term that I like, to be truly settled. To be truly settled. When we're truly settled, when we know who we are, when we remember even for a moment who we are, we're settled. When we're truly settled, we're alive to all that's given to us in each moment. We're alive with a spirit of generosity. So this is the first perfection of wisdom, the first paramita. The paramita of dana, generosity. I would say this is also what Dogen calls daishin, great mind, magnanimous mind. The extent of our generosity depends on how we experience ourselves and our reality, right? When our understanding of ourselves and our reality is narrow and grasping, when we're at war, when we're driven by this craving, we're not self-cherishing. We're selfish but not self-cherishing. Then we cannot give. We're not at peace. When our understanding of ourselves and our reality is deep and broad and well established, we don't need to steal, we don't need to grasp, we give naturally to ourselves and others and to the world. And we can experience the gratitude and joyfulness that comes from this understanding of giving and being given to. So, Daishin, great mind, has a quality of vastness and a sense of inclusiveness, stability, contentment, kindness, vitality. There's no need to steal. We have an accurate sense of our needs, and we can meet them with integrity and connection with others. That's a sustainable life, right? We talk about sustainability. What is sustainability? We need to have an accurate sense of our needs, we need to meet them with integrity, and we need to know our connection with all of life so that there's this mutuality that we experience. Magnanimous mind is understood as noble, courageous, generous, and forgiving. I was thinking about kind of the sequence of this, how it works. And I was thinking delusion leads to fear and is based on fear, right? Fear leads to stealing. Stealing leads to disturbance of the mind. Suffering, clinging. Which then often leads to more delusion, right? So we think in circles. Kindness and awareness leads to inclusivity. This is Daishin, great mind. Stability, confidence. And that confidence and stability, that sense of being supported, naturally expresses itself in generosity, gratitude, mutuality, right? So we can start anywhere in this sequence. If we address delusion through our practice, our zazen, our attention to our lives, we decrease the root of stealing. When we support kindness and awareness, we support the mind in which the thought of stealing does not arise. Generosity, gratitude, and mutuality naturally do. Shohaku Okamura said, "The Bodhisattva precepts we receive in the Soto Zen tradition are also called Zenkai, Zen precepts. This means that our Zazen and the precepts are one. In our Zazen practice, we put our entire being on the ground of true reality of all beings, instead of the picture of the world that is a creation in our minds. By striving to keep the precepts in our daily lives, we strive to have a life guided by our Zazen." I like this phrase, "we put our entire being on the ground of true reality." I like that a lot. That's what we do in our zazen. We just put ourselves on the ground of true reality. That's it. Now, what does that mean? Well, we discover that breath by breath. But I think it's very interesting to think about this in relationship to the precept of stealing and how the precepts, all the precepts, guide our lives. How do we do that in our day-to-day lives? How do we live our lives when we put our entire being on the ground of true reality? How would you express your life at work, at home, on the road, in the grocery store, when you know that you've put your entire being on the ground of true reality? I think it's worth considering. So that's a very lofty thing, right? Put ourselves on the ground of true reality. I'm like, whoa, okay. What is that called when it's at home? The other side of this is to get very specific. So one of the real advantages of Vinaya-style practice with the precepts is that it's very particular. So you do things like you say, I am not going to... If I pick up a pencil from someone's desk without their permission and I walk off with it, that is taking what is not given. And I need to put it back. So you can get very, very specific, and I really encourage you to do this because, you know, we get Bodhidharma, there is nothing to steal. You know, it all sounds very big and vast, right? But we need to bring it down to very, very specifics too. So, you know, at work, if there's a carton of milk in the refrigerator, do you put some in your coffee? You know? Or do you pick a pencil up off of somebody's desk? Just get very meticulous about this. Look for the small ways that you might take what is not given. Look for mutuality and generosity. And do this with an eye of developing this settled sense in which generosity and non-stealing just naturally arise. This is the Dharma gate of realization. So I think if we take up each of these precepts as we go along, we can cultivate this Zazen mind, this Zenkai mind, and enjoy ourselves together. The precepts are about harmony in our community, in ourselves, with the objects in our lives, with the other people in our lives. So when we study the precepts, we're studying our inner life and how we express ourselves together. And thinking about the second precept of not stealing in a subtle way really increases our opportunities to open up to the practice in our ordinary life.